Super Bowl 51 is set. We look back at how we got to that Patriots-Falcons matchup. Plus, we take a little look ahead at what to expect in the big one 2 weeks from now. Plus, a little bit of talk on possible upheaval on Green Bay's roster, changes in the Colts front office, and what Kyle Shanahan might do in San Francisco if he takes the job. All that and much, much more in the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Andy Benoit, but not literally here with Andy Benoit, because Andy is down in Mobile, Alabama via telephone. So if he sounds like he's maybe, not his usual self, it's because he's on a phone. And Andy, I'm very jealous that you're down in Mobile, because I love Senior Bowl and all the practices. I watch every minute of it.
Yeah, and see, nobody down here pays that close attention to the practices. We all pretend that we do. We're standing around the field, but it's a lot of people just BSing with each other, talking to each other. And I'm down here to pick the brains of coaches around the league. Hey, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? And this is a great week to get answers to all those unasked questions from them. I learn a lot down here.
Yeah, I know. You're down there for the networking, but I will keep an eye on all the practices for everyone. If anyone down there has questions, I will watch every second of it. And it's always a debate in my house and always an argument over why I have to watch every second of Senior Bowl practices. But I love the draft. I'm a draft dork, and that's just what I do this time of year. But we have plenty of non-Senior Bowl stuff to talk about, mostly because the Super Bowl teams are set. If you read Andy Benoit's Extra Point article on the MMQB at the beginning of the postseason, you probably already knew that this was coming, but Super Bowl 51, Patriots versus Falcons. We're going to deep dive of the conference championship games here, and we're going to break it down. Each side of the ball will get its own topic.
Number one.
We're going to start in Foxborough. This is topic number one. This is what the Patriots offense did to the Steelers defense. And I will say this, Andy. I have a lot of Steeler fan friends in my family and in my social network. I also have a lot of Patriots fans actually too. But what I was hearing all day and what I was seeing all day in this game was Steelers were giving some awfully big cushion against these Patriots receivers, and it seemed kind of inevitable the way this played out.
Well, a few things. For one, you know, there was talk during the broadcast that why aren't the Steelers going man-to-man? And I don't look at Twitter during games, but my guess is Twitter was ablaze with people saying the Steelers should play man-to-man instead of zone. They're getting killed in zone. They're a zone defense. They don't practice man-to-man. That's not how they play. That's saying that the Steelers should have gone to man-to-man would have been like saying the Packers should have gone to two tight ends, two running backs, and tried to pound the ball to get back in the game. That's not the way the Packers play. You have to play your style of football, and that's what got Pittsburgh here. Having said that, their style of football does not match up well to New England, because we've talked about when you play zone coverage, you leave yourself vulnerable to getting wide receivers matched against your linebackers, because you know where the defenders will be in their zones and you can attack them with certain offensive guys, and we saw that tonight. Mm-hmm. And the other issue that you have, and you talked about the cushion, Gary, is if the offense throws the ball on first or second down, you get more cushion that way. The Steelers coach it like that. They've always been a bend but don't break defense. They try to get you into third down, but they are a cushion type of defense on first and second down, and maybe that's where they need to tighten up a little bit. But that's their style of football, and it's worked very well for them. Yeah. They ran into a team that matches up well to them and a team that has the best quarterback probably of all time.
Yeah, they did. Anyone who listened to the Look Ahead podcast last week, you probably noticed a little bit of Julian Edelman working against Lawrence Timmons on a play or two, and that was sort of candy from a baby type of stuff. Chris Hogan ended up being the sort of the big producer in the receiving core today for the Patriots, which I guess is a little bit unexpected, but certainly they go to who's open. He got the big flea flicker. It seems like the Patriots only break out the flea flickers for the Steelers.
Well, the Steelers have a nosy free safety in Mike Mitchell, a guy that likes to hit it downhill pretty hard. He's an aggressive player. At times, he doesn't do this as much as he used to, but at times he would play his deep safety position a little bit flat. Not quite deep enough, in other words. And so flea flicker is a great tactic to do against that. When you do flea flicker, you're trying to influence the safeties, not the linebackers, although the linebackers will bite on it too. So that's something New England does in that part of the field. And Chris Hogan did have a nice game. But really, Gary, and this isn't to take anything away from him, but he's the guy who happened to get the catches tonight. He's the puzzle piece, and they had good route combinations that beat zone coverage. And Hogan consistently wound up being the guy that reaped the benefits of it, because Edelman tends to run the shorter routes and Hogan the intermediate routes, and they beat Pittsburgh at the intermediate levels. Hogan could very well, against Atlanta, play just as well as he did in this game, but come away with three catches or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, look, this Patriots offense, when they went against Houston in the divisional round, they had the, you know, Brady throws two interceptions. They just didn't look sharp. And certainly the Texans, you know, they have a superior defense to what Pittsburgh has, and certainly that had a lot to do with it. But did you get the feeling that the Patriots were just a little bit better this week than they were last week?
Oh, yes, certainly they were. And they played a more static Steelers defense. Houston does so many things with coverage disguises and different fronts. And the big difference between Houston and Pittsburgh is that they have the cornerbacks to support all of that. They have lockdown corners at least the perimeter and probably inside as well. They can play that way. So Pittsburgh doesn't have quite the cornerbacking talent, which limits them a little bit in what they can do with some of their disguises and how they can employ their guys elsewhere.
Number two.
Well, Andy, should we flip it around to the other side of the ball for topic two?
I'm all for it, and I assume we start with the impact of Le'Veon Bell being gone. Are people, is that kind of at the top of people's minds?
It has to be. I mean, the Steelers haven't been a team that has just come out and throw in a very long time. That was not what they did during this season-ending win streak, and that's what they had to do in this one.
Remember, what's interesting, Bell has played unbelievable the last 2 weeks coming into this, and even before that, late in the regular season. Having said that, when you take him out and put D'Angelo Williams in, you don't have to change a whole lot about your approach philosophically. Williams can do the same concepts that Bell can do. He's not going to do them as well, but you can still run your full offense. So I don't know if the loss of Bell, it's certainly better to have him in there, but I don't know if it contributed heavily to the way the game flowed or certainly the game's outcome. The other thing, Gary, remember we talked last week about when Kansas City went to those 5-1 fronts, mm-hmm. how much that changed the dynamics of Pittsburgh's running game. New England played those 5-1 fronts a lot tonight. That was expected. And when they did that, when you do that, you force offensive linemen into one-on-one matchups across the board. And so it becomes about winning fistfights and the phone booth. And you're not getting two-on-one matchups with offensive linemen double-teaming one guy and working up to linebackers. You're forcing everyone to go man-to-man. And they didn't have anyone that could block Allen Branch or Malcolm Brown. And that's been the case with a lot of teams lately. Allen Branch and Malcolm Brown have been dominant run defenders down the stretch this season.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the one thing I wonder with the Steelers offense, and like you said, look, Williams has a similar skill set to Bell. They can certainly do some of the same things that they do with D'Angelo Williams. It seems like they were just less willing to do it. And, you know, Bell's a phenomenal runner. Williams is a good runner. He's a pretty good runner. And it just felt like they abandoned the run sort of earlier than they probably would have liked to.
Yeah, it very well could be. And the difference between Bell and Williams, so when we say that they have a similar skill set, what we're saying is you can call the same plays with both of them. But the way those plays work out is going to be different because Bell is more of a creator than Williams. Williams mm-hmm. is a north and south type of runner. Bell is in any direction he needs to run type of runner. So maybe they did abandon the run because they didn't feel they had the creative element there. And again, I think it's there's something, if you can't block the defensive tackles, if you can't move the line of scrimmage in the run game, that's when offensive coordinators get reluctant to keep calling run plays because it's frustrating. And I think why do we bother with this? We're not gaining any yard. You get no yardage that way. So if your offensive line can't win physically, if they're not powerful enough, that's almost always the reason that coaches give me when I say, hey, why'd you abandon the run in this game? It's when you lose confidence in your offensive linemen.
No, I could see that. You know, Ben Roethlisberger was okay in this game. You did see some mistakes from the Steelers' young receivers, the non-Antonio Brown crew. That would be Sammy Coates had the early drop, and Kobe Hamilton ran out of bounds in the red zone and took himself out of a play there. Eli Rogers had the catch and fumble when this thing really started to get away. You know, I don't know. It's like the Steelers hadn't played this style of football in months, and literally like going back to pre-Thanksgiving was the last time that they sort of rolled out an offense like this, and I think you kind of saw why tonight.
Yeah, they're not good at the receiver positions other than with Brown. We talk about their depth, and they have guys that, okay, they have guys that can be on the field, so I guess they're deep in that sense, but of course they do. Every team's got backup receivers. That's what Hamilton and Rodgers, mostly Hamilton, Coates more as the season progressed, they looked more and more like backups. And that's another thing coaches tell you, is the more you see a backups, the less you like what you see. And eventually they get back to, you know, it all averages out to your level of talent eventually. So not having Martavis Bryant all season long, not having Wheaton in there, Coates with his inconsistencies that were caused by his injuries early on, he never recovered from that. That wound up catching up to him. And I thought really the only time they looked functional as a passing game, and why it's worth mentioning is because Atlanta happens to do this very well, is when they went to their 3-by-1 sets and had the tight end on the weak side. And Jesse James got matched against Patrick Chung 3 or 4 times and won those battles a lot of the time. They unbalanced the formations, and that got working a little bit. Just, it wasn't a big enough factor to swing the game, certainly, but it's something to keep in mind, because I would guarantee you Atlanta's going to take a very close look at that. That's where New England looked most vulnerable in pass defense, but most of the game they were dominant there.
Yeah, look, the Patriots defense was good in this one. And I'm going to say something, and you're not going to like it because it's very nitpicky, but Logan Ryan kind of terrifies me if I'm a Patriots fan, because there were at least 2 times where he doesn't get his head around, and boy, I mean, you know, you hear, oh, great play, that's great defense right there. It's such a fine line between 2 pass interference calls on him and 2 broken up passes. So that makes me a little bit nervous.
I'm comfortable with that. He's a little bit of a fine line player. It's the nature of his style of play too. Somewhat, he's a physical guy. And when you rely on physicality, then you're walking that fine line with pass interference. Absolutely.
Well, there you go.
Number 3.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Patriots-Falcons matchup later in the show. But right now we're going to move on to topic 3, and that is the Steelers and what they do this offseason. They're in pretty good shape. They figure they're going to, if not figure out something long-term with Le'Veon Bell, and I don't even know if they're interested in doing that. They would at least franchise tag him and bring him back. Martavis Bryant would presumably be back next year, so that sort of re-solidifies your receiving core here. I don't know, Andy. I mean, when you look at this defense, they were young in the secondary, but you figure, you know, you get another year, they get better. Do they have to address something on the edge? Can you expect this out of James Harrison, and does Bud Dupree keep on getting better?
I think Dupree does keep on getting better. Harrison, they'll have to manage his snaps again. They rotated him early in the season, so they need better depth at that outside linebacker position if they're going to continue doing that. You can't count on a guy in his late 30s to come on strong at the end of the season 2 years in a row like that. So they probably do want to take the best edge player available, because Jarvis Jones didn't work out. Arthur Motes is just a guy. Anthony Ciccolo had his opportunity and he didn't take advantage of it when he started a few games mid-season. I would say they go after best edge player available, because I don't see any other needs anywhere on this team. As long as, you know, you tell Martavis Bryant, stop doing drugs, keep your eye on the ball, and you get him back in the lineup, and now it's the most dynamic offensive skill set players in the NFL again.
Yeah, I mean, Ladarius Green, you figure you'd have him back next year with the concussion problems pending, but you know, those are a couple of very dynamic weapons returning to the lineup. I'll ask you this. Lawrence Timmons, he's a free agent this offseason. Do you bring him back? Does it feel like he's sort of on the start of the decline here?
I think he is a little bit on the start of the decline, but when you have so many speedy guys around him, that's not the worst thing. I mean, like, you don't want him being in decline, but he might not be as exposed because there's so much team speed around him. What's interesting about Timmons, I think he's an excellent player. You wonder about him as is he a cagey veteran or not? You know, they don't have the green dot on his helmet because they feel that Timmons is a guy that just needs to play. He's not as good when he has to think the game. That's not, that doesn't mean he's not a smart player, but he's got to play fast and instinctive, and he doesn't see the game like a field general would. And so if he's starting to lose a little bit of the athleticism, if age is catching up, then the question is, what does he fall back on? If it can't all be instincts. And so that's the fine line with him is, will he be a good player if he's old? And we'll find out. They'll give us the answer to that. This is an easy one. Either they re-sign him or they don't. He's not going to get a huge contract out on the open market.
Yeah.
It's going to be largely a function of what the team wants to do and if they want to bring him back. I think they will. I think they do like him a lot, and there's reason to. And it's not like he's an old man. He's only 30 years old. But they have a decision to make there, certainly.
All right. Well, can I, Andy, hot take it and say the Steelers are the second best team in the AFC looking forward to 2017?
That was exactly what they were this year. So I don't know how hot that take would be. That sounds just like regular. That's just a take.
That's a lukewarm take. That's a take that's been sitting on the counter for an hour and a half.
Yes.
All right. Then I will take that take.
Number four.
But let's move on to topic number four, and that is going to be what happened down in Atlanta today. The Falcons just dominate the Packers, and this was Falcons offense versus Packers defense. This was a mismatch. This was a complete beatdown. You know, the Falcons just keep on going here. Andy, in your mind, how much of this was the greatness of the Falcons defense versus the, I don't know, sort of scotch tape together Packers cornerback and core?
Well, what great offenses do is find your weaknesses and exploit them consistently. And Green Bay, their defense is not as bad as it looked today, but they do have a glaring weakness, and that's the cornerback position this year. Remember, they have Sam Shields, but he's been hurt. He hasn't been available. Quentin Rollins was healthy, but it wasn't on the field a whole lot in this game. So they're down to their backup corners. Those guys, it goes back to the theme, the backups, the more you see them, the less you enjoy what you see. And Atlanta exploited those guys redundantly. And that's playing great offense. That's how you attack in the NFL.
Yep. Now, Demarius Randle had a brutal day. They targeted him early, and then obviously, you know, Gunter's trying to run with Julio Jones, and it's just not going to work out. I don't know what else you can say about this Falcons offense at this point. Kyle Shanahan, the play designs are fantastic. The play calling is exceptional. It's going to be great to see what happens in Houston in 2 weeks.
I'm eager for that because Shanahan right now is so far and away the best offensive coach in the NFL among play callers. He has had an incredible season. He's getting better each week. And now he's going up against Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, and those two are going to have an extra week to prepare. And we're going to talk more about that a little bit in this show, and especially in the next few shows. But I don't know what that's going to look like. New England's going to have to do something special against Atlanta. I don't think this is an offense you can just line up and play against, regardless of whether you're a man-to-man defense, a zone defense, regardless of how well you tackle, which New England does. Atlanta's too good right now. They're operating too smoothly. They're too well coached. They're too well quarterbacked. You have to try to out-scheme them somehow or throw something at them that they haven't seen because they'll out-execute you otherwise.
Number five.
Let's jump ahead to topic five, and this was the Packers offense going against the Falcons defense. I thought Aaron Rodgers was, if you hadn't watched the last, 2 months or so, you would have said, Aaron Rodgers, he was all right. You know, he was good. He wasn't great in this game, but he was not at the same level that he had been at during the, what did it end up, 8-game winning streak?
Yep, he wasn't. He wasn't as precise. The ball location wasn't there. He still made some incredible throws, and when he gets on the move, he's lethal. But Atlanta did not let him get on the move very often. And what they did, and I don't want to say it surprised me. I didn't think they'd do it. I thought they'd either drop extra guys into coverage or they'd blitz them. But I thought they'd be the first one. I thought they'd drop those extra guys because teams don't like blitzing Rodgers because they feel he's going to extend the play anyway. So might as well have extra guys back in coverage for when he does. But Atlanta came after him. It was clear that they were game planning blitzes, slot blitzes with Brian Poole was a big factor. They had some linebacker blitzes and they did stunts and twists with the blitz. They were very, very aggressive with their pass rush concepts. And it worked. I mean, they didn't kill Rodgers with it, but they certainly disrupted the rhythm and timing and flow. And they made the games played on their terms. They didn't let Rodgers dictate the rhythm and flow of the game. They didn't let him decide when he's throwing it. They made him throw it when they wanted him to throw it. They were the aggressors in this one. Atlanta was the aggressive team.
Brian Poole coming on those slot blitzes, I mean, it seemed to literally catch Aaron Rodgers off guard. It looked like he didn't see him on two or three occasions.
Yeah, there were some of those. And I like the tactic because the other thing that's gone on with Green Bay is their offensive line has been outstanding. And when you blitz, you then challenge the offensive line mentally. And if they're already dominating everybody in the NFL physically, if their pass blockers are holding up very well, then you add that mental dimension. It was a gutsy way to do things. And I think we'll need to see the all 22 to know how often they truly played man-to-man. But they came out and played man-to-man the first several snaps in the first few series, I want to say. And so when you're comfortable with your corners and man coverage and you feel you can beat their receivers, and their receivers were less than 100%. Jordy Nelson played very well, but nobody noticed that Devontae Adams was on the field. Yeah. Randall Cobb had a quiet day. When it's a depleted receiving core or a banged up receiving core, maybe it's easier to do that. But Atlanta felt comfortable going man-to-man against those Packer receivers, and that's a big reason why they were able to bring so many of the blitzes that they did.
Yeah, you know, the Falcons, they actually did sit back in zone a couple plays on the first series, and it was a little bit confusing, and they just sort of flipped the switch after that. But yeah, this was a dominant performance on both sides of the ball for the Falcons. Certainly no doubt that they earned their way to Super Bowl 51 here. We're going to talk about that matchup in a moment.
Number six.
But first, let's talk about topic six. The Packers offseason, and this is going to be a fascinating offseason for Green Bay. I want to start on offense, even though that's probably the place where fewer changes are coming. Look, does Mike McCarthy, is it time to... we talk about this with the Giants, and it's like, do you sort of step back and say, you know, this isn't working like it did 5 years ago. We got to do something not drastically different, but pretty different. If you're Mike McCarthy, are you thinking that same thing, or are you sort of depending on basically Aaron Rodgers to play at a superstar level for an entire season, kind of like he did in the second half of this one?
That's what's interesting is Rodgers played at such a high level. The question is, how much can you count on that moving forward? I mean, he's Aaron Rodgers. He's going to play at a high level, but the way he played the last several weeks of this season, Sunday night against Atlanta, Sunday afternoon aside, that's almost too much to ask of a QB. It's almost too much to assume. And systems tend to beat players ultimately when players have to be the ones that run the system. But when Green Bay doesn't get the otherworldly plays from Aaron Rodgers, they don't have a lot to fall back on. They're very reliant on that. Atlanta, on the other hand, if Matt Ryan has an off day, there's a lot the Falcons can do to still keep the wheels turning on that. They have a running game, a very defined running game. They have clear route ideas out of different formations. They run route combinations. They're a very well put together offense. So there's more stability underneath them. So what do you do if you're Green Bay? How much do you want to emphasize stability and try to do that? And how much do you want to keep relying on the most talented quarterback we've ever seen? And I don't have a good answer to that. I don't know. So far they've chosen the latter. They've gone with the Rodgers answer and ridden him, and they're not a highly schemed offense. I think they're capable of being that. But I don't know what you do. I think you need to probably strive for a happy medium, though, and find a little bit of both. They need to get back to some of the stuff that they do extremely well and become a little more consistent there. It's hard to rely on Rodgers at the level he has, but if they choose that, you know, how do you argue with that, too?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the personnel. I assume Jared Cook would be retained and might have even earned himself a multi-year deal this season. He's a very important part of what they do now.
Well, and I assume he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah,
but they're gonna have to bid on the open market against him. And Cook has an agent who's very aggressive with that stuff, and it's a smaller agency, which means he gets more attention from that. Mm-hmm. From his agent, so you can bet they're going to shop him around.
Yep. And the real bummer out of this game, well, if you're a Packers fan, you're bummed regardless about the result, but TJ Lang, who really had a nice season, suffered, and not really a whole lot of updates on this, looked like a foot injury, but whatever it was, it seemed major. He is a unrestricted free agent this offseason. I mean, you figure they hang on to him if he's healthy, but, you know, at this point, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, unfortunate, really bad timing for him. You hate to see that, but he's a guy you would want to retain. And then the question we got, like you said, to see on the injury, if he's healthy, he I imagine he'd get top five guard money from somebody.
Yeah. Defensive side of the ball for the Packers is, I mean, this is where everything's up in the air here. Dom Capers might retire, might come back. We're not sure at this point. Andy, what do you think of the work Dom Capers did this year? Obviously, you know, not great results down the stretch, but also playing with a whole lot of backups.
Yeah, he had his hands tied a little bit, and I thought he survived it pretty well to play with backups. They changed, you know, he didn't run a lot of his usual stuff. He likes to do fire zone blitzes, different fronts, different attacks with linebackers, and we saw a little bit of that. We saw some of that early in this game against Atlanta, but it was not by any means a defining element, a defining trait of this defense. So they weren't able to be who they want to be, which goes back to the cornerback position, because we talked about Atlanta and how they were comfortable blitzing. Your blitzes often depend on your comfort level with your corners. In almost every scheme, that's the case. And when Sam Shields is healthy, they're a much more expansive defense. They're much more of a blitz-oriented defense. They're harder to game plan against. They're harder to play against. It's not about Sam Shields so much. It's about the concept of having a quality man-to-man corner. Whether it's Sam Shields or someone else, you need that kind of cornerback to play and use all of your weapons. So I would expect him to go out and try to find the best corner available. Because the other thing is Quentin Rollins and Demarius Randall, you're not going to give up on them. They're 2015 first and second rounders. Randall was a first round, Rollins a second round. But you also pay attention and notice that they've been very inconsistent, and you got to hedge your bets a little bit there, and having some competition for them wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah, I thought they both slid back. I thought Randall especially slid back this year. And look, Sam Shields is he's a question mark for next year. He had another concussion, extended absence. He might be forced out of the game, but we'll have to see what happens with that. The big name here is Clay Matthews, who really didn't make a big impact in the postseason. You know, they can get out from under him if they want. Andy, what would you do if you were the Packers?
It depends how much the injuries factored into what he did this year. He was not the same pass rusher that he's been. He not even close. He's not the impact player. He's 30 years old, so the question then is it the fact that he's now in his 30s that's contributing to the decline, or was it that he battled through some injuries? And we'd just be guessing at that. Green Bay has more information than we do. It'll be interesting to see how they interpret it. Clay Matthews is an interesting case. And I would imagine, though, if Green Bay doesn't want him, someone's going to want him. Someone will still pay big money for him. But Green Bay is going to tell you that's going to be the revealer, because they're not going to let him get away if they feel he's the guy that he once was, or he's the guy that he was 2 years ago.
Well, they'd have to. He's got at least one more year on his deal, but it's escapable. They wouldn't be paying out the butt if that's how you want to phrase it. Yeah, he's through 2018, but they can get out from under $15 million cap hit, $4 million in dead money if they let him go this offseason. But
yeah, that's a fine line, isn't it?
It is
the $4 million in dead. Yeah, so they're going to tell you how they feel about Matthews, because that's such a fine line. This comes down to the player. Then the money is. The money's important, but it's the player is going to be revealed here. If they let him go, then they feel he's getting old. If they keep him, then they felt he was just banged up.
Number 7.
All right, Andy, let's move on to topic number 7. We are obviously going to be deep diving the Super Bowl quite a bit over the next 3 shows. But look, it's fresh. It's happening. We know the teams now. We're going to take a quick look at what might go down in Houston in 2 weeks. I want to start with the Patriots offense against the Falcons defense here, because Super Bowl 49, we saw a Dan Quinn defense against Tom Brady, and the Seahawks they held together pretty well. And when it sort of came apart, it was the Jeremy Lane injury, and it was the Cliff Averill injury sort of bit him a little too hard. And this Falcons defense, not as talented, but they have. Look, we've been looking for holes to be punching this defense in the postseason, and it has not happened.
And they can do a lot of things. They started out as a predominantly zone-based defense, much like this. So Brady just went against the Steelers defense. That's very young, mm-hmm. and plays a lot of the same coverage concepts. And Brady picked him apart. He's going against another very young defense who in Atlanta, and like the Steelers, that Falcons defense got better as the season progressed. But the reason they got better wasn't so much that they just got more comfortable in their scheme. They did that, but their scheme expanded. They got more comfortable in man-to-man, various forms of man-to-man. That made them play faster in cover 3. Everything got a little bit better for Atlanta, and now you've got a fast defense that can do a lot of different things. They're a more expansive defense than the Steelers, even though it might, I'm sure on the surface, you'd think the Steelers are the more expansive defense. It's not the case. Atlanta has a lot more they can put on the plate.
Well, I was going to say probably more expansive than the Steelers, but less expansive than the Texans.
Yep, I would say that, and that's probably where they rank too right now. I would say they're going to be the second toughest defense New England will face in this postseason behind Houston. And if Atlanta were to play as well as Houston's defense played against New England, Atlanta's going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. Would you try matching up man with these corners? We've said all offseason the absence of Desmond Trufant is a big one, but these guys are holding up all right.
I'm going to have to give a teaser here, because I've been just racking my brain for 2 hours now, driving around, walking around, thinking, what would I do if I'm New England facing this offense? And I don't have an answer yet. Usually that stuff, I think of it within 2 minutes of a game ending. I look to the next game. This one is different. I don't know what you do against that Falcons defense or offense. I think it has to be something unique. It has to be aggressive. I would expect like Patrick Chung to be a big player. Maybe you put him on Devontae Freeman and try to zero Freeman out of the game and double team Jones. I don't know though. I'm in the brainstorming phases of this, and fortunately my decision doesn't matter. I don't have to go out and try to win the Super Bowl, but we've got 2 weeks to sort this out. New England's got a lot to sort out. Their decision does matter.
We do. Yeah, we will have obviously plenty on Super Bowl 51 coming up on the next couple of shows. Our next show is, of course, on Thursday. It will include the big mailbag we do, and it's wide open now because we don't have, 4 games to deep dive. And plus, it's the bye week, so we're probably not going to deep dive the Super Bowl in totality quite yet anyway. So send your questions, anything looking back on the last season, looking ahead to offseason, free agency, draft, coaches, whatever you got. Twitter, Andy_Benoit, or GGrambling_SI. We are both on Facebook. Facebook is fantastic. Write as long as you want. Or you can email talkback@themmqb.com. Just write the word podcast either in the subject line or just somewhere in the email, and then we will be likely to find it. A little bit of off-season housekeeping to take a look at here. It's the off-season for everyone except for the Falcons and the Patriots right now.
Number 8.
Topic number 8, This is the firing of Ryan Grigson in Indianapolis. I'll just say, I'll start with this, Andy. There was a lot of celebration coming out of the Colts building. I wouldn't even call them whispers. Just people saying they were very happy he's gone.
Yeah, and you know, we're not in the building, so we can't speak to that. But it's more than one person saying that, it sounds like, coming out of Indianapolis.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, Grigson, on paper or basically by any measurement, didn't get the job done. They don't have an answer right now. I don't know what Jim Irsay's plan is. He's maybe chasing Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning is maybe interested, maybe not. It sounds like it is not imminent. It sounds like it might not happen at all. So they are out there shopping for a new GM. Chuck Pagano apparently is going to stay, even though they had the flirtation with John Gruden, which is completely baffling. John Gruden hasn't coached a game since the George W. Bush era. That's two presidents ago now. That's the last time John Gruden coached. So I have no idea what they're doing there in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and what's interesting is on Grigson, you know, his first draft, 2012, on the outset, it looked like one of the great drafts of all time. He had Andrew Luck, yeah, which kind of fell into his lap, I understand. But he got both of those tight ends, Fleener and Dwayne Allen, and they played well together. He got T.Y. Hilton, mm-hmm, in the third round, and then this doesn't sound like a name now, but it was at the time. He was very good before he got hurt. He got his running back, Vic Ballard, yeah, in the fifth round. So his first draft, he got pretty much every skill position sorted out, and he had a team and the nucleus built for the long haul. And over time, slowly but surely, it just hasn't panned out that way. And I guess it was he didn't have the other positions figured out. They never quite got offensive line sorted. They were always a little bit behind on defense. They missed on some of their defensive picks. If you had told me back in 2012 that Ryan Grigson would have been fired, he's going to be fired in early 2017, and they're going to sing and dance in the streets in Indianapolis, I would never have believed that.
Yeah. No, it's funny you mentioned Vic Ballard, because Vic Ballard got hurt, and that's what led them to go out and trade the first round pick for Trent Richardson, which obviously is the, I mean, that's, you know, that's like the first line of his professional obituary at this point. Not that Ryan Grigson will never get another job, but, you know, that he is forever tattooed with the, I don't know, scarlet Trent Richardson face. I don't know how they do that.
And what happens is teams look at how they scouted him. They see Trent Richardson as the Alabama guy coming out. They don't see him as the failed Browns running back, yep, because the assumption around teams is, well, we get him in our system, we get him in our locker room, we'll coach him up, we know what we're doing. And so they go get him based on their original scouting report. And that's a hard one to guess at, too. I mean, is that the right thing to do or the wrong thing? We could say it sounds wrong, and it was wrong for them. But look at, like, the Patriots, for example, and the success they've had this year with Eric Rowe and Kyle Van Noy, other guys who didn't work out with the high draft picks on their previous teams. They've worked in New England, so you do get some of these guys in our system and doing it our way, and it does work out. It's a tough one to say. I didn't like the Richardson trade at first, but that doesn't mean the concept was wrong. It certainly was a bad mark on Grigson's, yeah, ultimate record, though.
Well, it's the old, you know, do you spend a first on a running back anyway type of debate. And if you are, you know, you want to be getting a star. And when the guy ends up being a complete bust instead, it's sort of deserved. But, you know, as far as the Colts going forward, they have a head coach. And it sounds like, at least Irsay is saying publicly, they're going to stick with Chuck Pagano there. And I don't know. I guess he's going to check every TV channel to see if he can find himself a general manager, and that is how they will conduct that search.
Number nine.
Topic number nine is actually, it's pretty Kyle Shanahan related here. We're going to talk about Kyle Shanahan most likely going out to San Francisco. And, you know, people sort of jumped on Jed York for very good reason the last couple of years. When you lose Harbaugh and then you go one and done with two head coaches, that is a disastrous run right there. But, you know, they were patient, And whatever you think of Kyle Shanahan, he was a hot name, and it looks like the 49ers are going to land him. It's obviously not definite at this point. And you know, I think back to when the Falcons hired Dan Quinn. They waited throughout that offseason, and everyone had grabbed their coaches quickly, and they waited until the end of the postseason and ended up getting Quinn. So sometimes the patient approach works out. But I want to ask you.
The Falcons, Gary, keep in mind, the Falcons were not a utter mess when they waited on Dan Quinn. They had their quarterback figured out. They'd been to some playoffs in recent years. I mean, they were just a team that was transitioning coaches. The Niners are a complete and utter mess. So to start out 2 weeks behind, even more than that, now they're going to be 4 weeks behind once the Super Bowl's done. That's significant. And then I guess I interrupted you, but my other thing with Shanahan, I'm a little disappointed he took this job, because I think he was with Josh McDaniels. He was the hottest head coaching candidate out there. I think his stock cooled a little bit during some interviews, but that's temporary. That'll get sorted out with time. And he would have been one of the hottest head coaching candidates next year as well. And he settled for what's easily the worst head coaching job in the NFL right now.
Well, I'll say this, and I don't disagree with anything you said, mostly because it's all correct, but look, if the 49ers are going to say, we'll give you 5 years, we realize this is a massive undertaking, that this is a huge rebuild and that we have to be patient, we'll give you 5 years and we'll let you handpick your quarterback. We have the number two pick. We have money to spend here. That's nice. That's a nice thing to have. You'd rather have a team that's already good, but, you know, the chance to sort of build your own roster here from scratch it's probably a little bit intriguing.
Yeah, and that's a great point you make. And if you can get a 5-year deal from them, then that does change the discussion a little bit, because that's guaranteed money over 5 years. And whether you get it from them or you get fired and someone else hires you, you're still going to get, at the end of the day, you're still going to get whatever your contract said.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, maybe that does factor in. It's easy for me to sit here and say, oh, I should have waited for the better job, but a lot of millions of dollars were probably presented to him, and that's not to be dismissed.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're speculating, because we are speculating, he has not taken the job. There's been nothing official. It's just assumed at this point that he will, but let's speculate on top of the speculation. Kyle Shanahan, should he go after Kirk Cousins, and is there only is there any way Kirk Cousins might shake loose out of Washington? I remember a couple years ago when it was RG3 and it was Kirk Cousins, it was Colt McCoy in Washington, and there was some merit to arguing Colt McCoy might be on the same level as Kirk Cousins.
And I don't think that's true anymore. I think Cousins is a better. I was one of those people saying that, and that was back when Cousins was very mistake prone. Remember, he would just make some boneheaded plays. He doesn't do that as much anymore. The experience has helped him. We got to remember, guys get better when they play more. It's like anything else. And so I think Cousins is a talent. I think he's certainly a starting QB talent. The arm is good enough. It's not quite as good as he treats it as sometimes, and that leads to more mistakes. But I think what we're going to see with Cousins, and I probably need to look at the contract a little closer, I think he'll get franchise tagged again, though. Why wouldn't you franchise tag him one more year?
I would think so, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the offseason brings. This is our imaginary world right now, Andy. The 49ers, of course, they have the number two pick. The draft class it's actually a really strong draft, except at quarterback. It is a very weak draft. And basically everyone coming out is probably a one-year project at least. You're going to have to spend a year developing them, because they're all coming out of those, you know, the spread offenses, those one-read offenses that they love so much at the college level. The other side of the speculation here, and this was Jay Glazer reporting on Sunday, that Chip Kelly would be under consideration to replace Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta if Shanahan does, as expected, leave. Kelly was, at least as far as reports go, very close to getting the Jacksonville job. That went to Nathaniel Hackett as they reassemble the great Syracuse staff of the late 2000s, the late aughts, is that what we're going to call it? Maybe it was early 10s. I can't even remember anymore. But Chip Kelly in Atlanta, it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense.
No, I don't like it one bit. It makes no sense. Atlanta has the best offensive scheme in the NFL, so find someone who's going to run that scheme, who knows what's going on. Chip Kelly does not run that kind of system, and if he installs even, let's say it's 20% of his flavor and 80% the old Shanahan flavor, that's not good enough. You want to get as close to 100% of the Shanahan flavor as possible, because we're looking at one of the most prolific offenses in NFL history, and it's improving still. It's gotten better over the course of this season, and it could very well be better next year and the year after that. So don't change anything. I think the guy you go to, I'd hire Matt LaFleur, the quarterback's coach. He's been under Shanahan some years. He was under him in Washington. He's now coaching Matt Ryan, of course. I would go with him and trust that he understands the system as much as possible, and hitch your wagon to that.
Yeah, they go. LaFleur actually goes back with Shanahan back to the Houston Texans days, if I remember correctly, which I'm looking up frantically on the internet right now.
Yeah, no, he's been. Yeah, you're correct. He's been. He was there in the late back to the. Are we calling it the 2000s or the aughts? Whatever it was. He was
2008, 2009,
and 2009. Yeah, no, he's and he was at Notre Dame in 2014. So he was out of the NFL that 1 year, but he's been around. He's 37 years old. He's a very good very good at teaching quarterbacking mechanics. It's some of the best discussions I've had have been with him on quarterbacking mechanics. But he would know the scheme by this point, and he would understand how it's worked and what Shanahan's done. I think you do that. Why would you? I don't think for a second you contemplate bringing in Chip Kelly. Or any outsider for that matter. We're talking about one of the best offenses in NFL history right now, and so much of it's happened because of the way it's been schemed and built.
Well, we will, we're going to talk about Chip Kelly this offseason regardless, but certainly if he is tabbed as the new offensive coordinator in Atlanta, we will talk about that quite a bit. But for now, it's all conjecture, and the dominoes will fall once Kyle Shanahan accepts or possibly refuses the 49ers job.
Number 10.
For now, we're going to go on with our show, and it is topic number 10. That is awards, the weekly awards. Andy, Offensive Player of the Week, do you want to kick off, or do you want to receive, or do you want to go first?
I will claim Julio Jones. I dibs Julio Jones.
All right. Well, I had just written down I'll take the other Falcon, so I'll take Matt Ryan, and then we'll send them one gift card, and then they can split it wherever they end up going. Andy,
have we ever seen anyone as good on slants and run after the catch on the slant as Julio Jones? I know Beckham's great at it too, and he's incredibly quick and fast. Jones has that speed and strength element, and his ability to break tackles on those slants. It's just absolutely incredible to watch.
Yeah. No, I mean that long one down the sideline, which sort of put to rest any doubt the Falcons fans had at the beginning of the second half. I mean poor Demarius Randle. He was having enough of a day, and he hustles over and gets a little stiff arm to the face for his trouble, and Julio Jones runs another 40 yards, and that's it.
It was just sometimes guys are just better than other players. In the NFL, everyone's great, but there are a few guys who are just simply better than everyone else. And Julio Jones is one of those very few guys, and we get to see it blossom and displays like that about once a month.
Yep, absolutely. Andy, who do you have for Defensive Player of the Week?
Defensive player, Grady Jarrett and Rashid Hageman stood out a little bit in the Green Bay game. I know they were going against backup guards in the second half. Packers had some injuries at both positions at guard. But those are important players for Atlanta, especially Jarrett. He's been a very good player all season long. And when he's penetrating, is getting in your backfield, that's a different looking Falcons defense. And we saw the good side of that Falcons defense like that today.
I'm going to give it to Malcolm Brown out in New England. I know it could have gone to him and or Alan Branch, but I just happened to notice Brown more during that game, and he was wrecking things up front. And he has become a very, very important piece and sort of a guy who, he's a first-round pick a couple years ago, but I think he gets overlooked. I think he's a guy he's sort of forgotten about, probably because of the role he plays, but he was, he did just wreck things against that Steelers offensive line today. Andy, special teams player of the week.
Well, he doesn't play special teams, but I want to build on your Malcolm Brown point, and I'll go with Trey Flowers for what he did on defense, and I think it probably inspired the special teams. I don't know, but I want to talk about Trey Flowers because you're right. Brown doesn't get noticed, and Flowers is a young player as well, and he is such a good technician. And with Brown and Flowers there together inside, and Flowers can play inside or outside, they've got that's one of the best young defensive linemen tandems in the NFL right now, against the run especially.
I will give my special teams player of the week. I will pull in Andy, and I will give it to Matt Bosher because I was live to it. From the MMQB account, I had to live tweet the Falcons-Packers game today, which I enjoy. I'm fine with. I'm fine doing it. But, yeah, like, end of the first quarter, I was kind of like, wait a second, who's the Falcons' punter? Is it still Bosher? And I had to look it up. So the fact that I had to look up Matt Bosher, I will give him my special teams player of the week. He punted twice.
You know what? I mean, this. All right, so you kind of mailed in your special teams. I mailed in my special teams.
Yeah.
Last week we talked about, what was it, the free kicks, and we got all kinds of information how wrong we were the week before, and then the last free kick was 2008. Then we come to find we were wrong again. The people that contacted us at first were wrong, and this is what happens when we let special teams into the show. We don't watch special teams closely. We don't study them on film. We really need – I don't know why we're talking about them right now.
Oh, because it's part of the game, Andy. It's the third unit. Games are won and lost.
I agree. It's important. I agree. It's absolutely important, and it decides a lot of games, but it's not something I don't know anyone who studies it. There's not time. We don't have time to study special teams, so we're just pulling it out of ourselves and talking about it.
Pulling it out of ourselves. I like these sayings. Well, look, maybe that'll be the off-season. That'll be our end-of-year resolution. End-of-season resolution is we'll put slightly more thought into special teams.
All right.
We'll each take like 3 minutes a day to really focus on special teams, like a meditation.
I feel like that's more disrespectful than just saying I don't know about it. I mean, it's you can't do it in 3 minutes. That would make us Skip Bayless or something. We'd be pulling it out of ourselves. This stuff takes time. You got to study the game, and you can't study all three sides of the ball. There's not enough time in the week for it.
I'll just say this, Andy. If I was getting Skip Bayless's paycheck, I would do Skip Bayless.
I
would be Skip Bayless
on Skip Bayless money. Yeah. Well, yeah. Everyone's got a price. You know,
Actually, I would do it for like a tenth of Skip Bayless money, is what it comes down to.
Really?
That's my price.
All right. Yeah.
Andy, who's your coach of the week?
Well, we've given Shanahan so much credit now, so I guess we would look over to the other side. You know, Matt Patricia's defense is the number one scoring defense in the NFL, and they went against an offense in Pittsburgh that's not what it was probably a year ago and had Le'Veon Bell out, but it's still one that has one of these marquee veteran QBs and has a great offensive line, and they thoroughly outplayed that offense, and they've done that all season long. And we wondered, can they do it against a big-time quarterback? They've really only had seen one all year, and that was Carson Palmer, who struggled. I guess they saw Russell Wilson as well, mm-hmm. and they got beat by Russell Wilson. But Matt Patricia's defense did execute well against a star quarterback.
Yeah. Absolutely. I also didn't mind to give it to Kyle Shanahan because I figure he has like a whole like trophy case full of MMQB 10 Things Podcast Coach of the Week awards. I will give it to Dan Quinn. I thought the Falcons were very good on defense all postseason. I don't know if they really had a signature game I could think of this season. I mean, they had some dominant performances against really bad offenses, but I thought they were much better in the postseason in these two games than I expected and than what a lot of people expected. And look, they held Aaron Rodgers in check at a time when no one was stopping Aaron Rodgers. And do you want to know a statistical oddity that I forgot to mention earlier in the show? In both Packers-Falcons matchups, Aaron Rodgers was the Packers' leading rusher in both of those games.
That's revealing. That tells you a lot. One thing it tells you is that they played more man coverage than they normally do, because a lot of times quarterback scrambles come against man-to-man because the man-to-man defenders have their eyes on the guy they're guarding instead of the ball in the QB. That also tells you they played the run pretty well. Green Bay didn't have a run game to fall back on. Green Bay doesn't care about that, though, either. They they came out calling run plays early in games every week this year, and it and towards the end of the season, that is. And it worked well for them until today because of Dan Quinn's defense. I like that pick for Coach of the Week.
Yep. Now that was Mike McCarthy's big thing this year. So they were gonna reestablish the run, and then they just ran out of running backs. That was the other problem. Montgomery was banged up. Christian Michael ended up six rushing attempts. That was their leader as far as carries went. But
yeah,
there you go, Andy. That's the end of our show. We will be back with the look-ahead show on Thursday. I'm not sure exactly what we'll look ahead to. Maybe we'll talk some coaches. Maybe some awards. We talked about awards earlier this year, like season awards.
Well, I think we owe the coaches to people because that's, what is it, 3 weeks in a row now that we've promoted the upcoming coach show, and there are no games on Sunday, so I think we need to follow through on that.
We've teased it a couple times. Well, maybe we'll do the awards on Sunday then when you're out of Mobile.
Oh, you're talking about the season-long awards show that we're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a good time to do that.
Yeah. We should stop talking about our plans publicly, though, since we consistently change our minds and things fall through, and we're just, yeah. we're just always thinking about special teams. I think that's our problem. That's going to do it. Thanks to producer Matt Havia for getting the whole setup going. Sean Cherry helped out too, getting it going with Andy down in Mobile this week. Chris Basil, our editor, as always, makes us sound great. All those guys at Digital Media, so good for us. Jeff Irwin, our researcher, always making us sound smart. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this show, this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You guys really are the best. Send your mailbag questions for the Thursday show. We definitely want them. Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We're on Facebook, talkback@themmqb.com. It's all good. We will get them. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Thing podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.